Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures. For more than 50 years, the museum has told stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character. Details at texancultures.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. COVID-19, also known as the coronavirus, continues to spread outside of China. Here in San Antonio, there are quarantined individuals at Joint Base San Antonio. So far, only one has tested positive for the virus and is being treated. To get the latest this morning, I spoke with Don Emmerich, the director of SA Metro Health, and Dr. Anita Kurian, assistant director of communicable diseases at Metro Health.
What we have right now is that we have two different situations. We are currently monitoring two buckets of work. The first bucket is the declaration that was established a few weeks ago that anyone traveling back to Bexar County from mainland China were instructed to contact their local health department. So here in Bexar County, it is Metro Health. And to contact us so that we could work with them on self-quarantine. That is working beautifully. That is working well. Our staff are working really hard to work with those families, and they're testing, taking temperatures twice a day. They're calling back our staff. And so that's working really wonderfully. We have a great partnership with our fire department here in the city, and just very pleased with that response, and everyone is adhering to the protocols that are expected through the declaration. The other piece of effort is what is really getting most of the high profile, and that is the two sets of evacuees that have come to Lackland Air Force Base. We had 91 passengers that came from Wuhan, which is ground zero at this point for COVID-19. Those evacuees stayed in a required 14-day quarantine on the base, and I'm sure that they're all very happy that they are leaving today to go home. And so we do have the one positive that was confirmed, and from that we call that the cohort one. And so that person is still here recovering and currently being still monitored. Now, cohort two is the next set of evacuees that recently came into Lackland Air Force Base from the Princess or the Diamond Princess cruise line. It is very contained, and so I think it's really important that we tell the citizens and the residents of San Antonio and the metropolitan area that the risk for exposure is really low. That is part of the reason why Lackland was set up for this, you know, to have a military base where it is contained, it is self-contained, it is monitored by CDC and HHS and DOD, and so it is all hands on deck, but it is being contained. The risk for it to seep over into the community is still very low, and we're working really hard to assure that.
How many people reported to the health department that, and they were going to self-quarantine?
It's a small number. You know, we're trying to be very careful to protect the dignity and the privacy of the families that are the people that are being self-quarantined, but it's very few. It's a very small number, and so we're really trying to keep that very private right now.
The first cohort, they are being released today and they're being allowed to go home. Or will they just be, is that like they're 100% not infected with coronavirus and now they have, there's no concern about them getting on an airplane and traveling with the general public, and that's just, they're just like another individual. Is that the idea?
That's correct. They are released from the quarantine. Typically, you tend to develop signs and symptoms within 2 to 14 days of exposure. So they have left the epicenter, which is Hubei province, almost 14 days ago, did not develop any symptoms. Now they are considered to be of no risk of transmitting illness or developing the symptoms.
Now, you're telling me that things are very under control. But we seem to be getting a different story from individuals like Bexar County Judge Nelson Wolf, who's asking at the Department of Defense to conduct coronavirus tests on these quarantined individuals at Joint Base San Antonio rather than transporting them to local hospitals. He says this is a risk of spreading the infection. Is that really a risk of spreading the infection if these individuals did have to go to local hospitals?
Yeah, so the ideal scenario is for the comfort and the dignity of the folks that are going through this, that any of the testing that is occurring, you know, it's just, it makes sense for folks to stay on base until the test results come back. What's happening is we're just trying to lessen the burden of the hospital system, right? And so, you know, if someone is going to get tested or if they have, you know, very minimal symptoms, they have to be tested. Those test kits, the specimens go to CDC. And we're talking anywhere between 2 to 4 days before we get the results back. If indeed, you know, what's happening is that we don't want folks sitting in our hospitals for 3 to 4 days when we don't even know what the test results are. That puts an amazing amount of strain and resources on our healthcare system that is 100% avoidable. So what we're really trying to do is there's been some discussion around, you know, the possibility of trying to keep folks on the base during that time that the test results are that we're waiting for the test results. And so we're just having a little bit of some negotiations with the federal government on whether that's possible. In the meantime, we have set up, you know, some triaging facilities for folks to be held until off base, but not in the hospital, until those test results come back.
It seems like the infection, the spread of coronavirus is actually, it's going around the world. It has not been contained to China. We're seeing outbreaks in South Korea and other parts of the world. Do we expect that this is something that we're going to be doing again here in San Antonio at Lackland Air Force Base, that we probably will have other cohorts and that we are refining the process right now on how we're going to be dealing with these future cohorts?
Yeah, that would be completely speculative. We have not had any information. We have not had any information that is to be, you know, something in the future.
Obviously, this is the system that is in place, and it's being used now. And if there are concerns in the future, they're going to be looking at what's worked so far. And this seems to be working, right?
You know, I think we're trying to set up the system to be able to address the needs of the people that are here now. I can tell you that we are maxing those resources. So I would say that it's working now, but I don't think that the system is strong enough to take on any additional burden at this time.
So dealing with coronavirus with Metro Health San Antonio, that has put a strain on your resources. Do you think that the federal government should step in and provide reimbursement?
Sure. I mean, I would tell you, as the Metro Health Director, I'm in contact with my peers across the country who are also dealing with this. And we are all in alignment that 100% we should be getting federal compensation for this. So it is a stress, it is a strain, financial strain on everyone that's involved in this.
There's extra leaning on San Antonio. You know, they flew these cohorts of people who've been possibly exposed to the coronavirus to San Antonio for quarantine and observation and also treatment, because we did get a positive. So San Antonio seems to be leaned on pretty hard here.
There's no question. That's right. You know, and I would say that I think that the situation at Lackland is the one that is concerning all of the system. And so, again, we're having daily calls. You know, our relationship and our communications with the state and with CDC, it is ongoing. We have them every single day. I would say right before our interview, we just got off the phone with the state. So we're constantly having daily conversations to assure coordination and cooperation, and the communication has been very good, but it's tough, you know. And so I think that it's a really, you know, this is why I love public health. There's a lot of work that we do behind the scenes that people just don't see. This is stuff that we do every day. Certainly the scale of COVID-19 is large, and it's big and it's scary and it's frightening and it's all over the news. But our public health systems do this every single day behind the scenes that people just don't know because we're pretty good at it. And until it becomes like, a big media story like this is, which is really important, I think that's when people start getting a glimpse of the hard work that that our public health systems do. So I'm very proud of my team. I'm proud of what the city of San Antonio is doing and Metro Health is doing. This is the time that we shine.
That was Dawn Emmerich, the director of SA Metro Health. We were also joined by Dr. Anita Kurian, Assistant Director of Communicable Diseases at Metro Health. When we come back from the break, we open up the phone lines. We'll take your questions about the coronavirus, 210-614-8980. We'll be right back.
Elementary school students with Spanish surnames in 1950s Driscoll, Texas, were held back for 3 years in first grade.
And so they made the argument that we have to segregate within the school in order to protect the white kids. We have to segregate them from kids that speak Spanish.
Their story is told in the film Stolen Education. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Support for this podcast comes from Sunshine Cottage's Noche del Sol, a fiesta kickoff event with Mexican food, entertainment, and Delaritas, plus a raffle and auctions to benefit the school for deaf children. March 26th, 6 p.m. More at sunshinecottage.org.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the latest developments with the coronavirus. And you can call in with your questions and comments. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. With me in the studio is Bonnie Petrie. She covers bioscience and medicine for Texas Public Radio. Also with us is Dr. Gene Patterson, scientist at Texas Biomedical Research Institute. It's great to have you here and answer some of these questions that people have about what is this thing, this coronavirus? When we call it a coronavirus, that's basically, it's a category, right?
Yeah, it's part of the coronavirus family. And the coronavirus family generally has always included common colds. And in the last few years, we've identified two coronaviruses that cause severe respiratory distress. One was SARS and the other was MERS. SARS also came out of China.
Is it something like, would I have come in contact with some sort of coronavirus in the past, typically?
Typically, we've all had coronavirus, the mild common cold form.
So when we talk about coronavirus is here and we talk about, oh my God, we have this novelty bias that makes it seem like this is something new and it's crazy and we have no idea what we're talking about. Actually, this is something that a lot of us have had this in some form or another, but this is just a new form.
Yeah, this is it's a novel coronavirus in that it doesn't cause the common cold. It causes severe respiratory problems and pneumonia and sepsis. Again, the first one we identified was SARS, severe acute respiratory syndrome in 2002, 2003. And then later there was a similar one called MERS, which was Middle East respiratory syndrome. And they are serious diseases. They cause pneumonia and they can be fatal.
And my immune system, is it typically going to be overwhelmed by something like this and it will do severe damage to me and I won't recover from it and I will die? Or is it something like I've seen this, my immune system's like, my antibodies, like, oh yeah, I've seen this before. I kind of know what to do and we'll figure it out.
Well, you don't have any immune to this virus right now unless you get it. Or if you had SARS, you might have some immunity to it. But what you have is a normal immune system that's reacting to a foreign object, which is a coronavirus. And unfortunately, we don't know why, this one just becomes more severe. It just causes a more serious illness. But again, we always have to figure out why do some people get sick and some don't. Some people are getting sick and sometimes dying because their immune system is diminished. Like in the elderly, there seems to be a high percentage of people that are dying that are elderly. And that's because our immune systems wane as we get older.
Bonnie Petrie, as you cover these developments here in San Antonio, as you cover bioscience and medical, what is it about this story that, you know, is how people are reacting to it? You think there is a fear factor that we have to keep in mind?
I do think that there has been some fear reaction to the presence of this virus, particularly since it the quarantine was announced at Lackland. But I do think that most people overwhelmingly in the city have been calm and rational and evaluating the information as it comes in. That's why our effort, I think, is important to get. I got Jean on, who's sitting next to me early, and to get the experts on early and often. So I think people with more information, good information, are less likely to panic. And so that's the goal.
Our phone lines are open. You've got a question about the coronavirus. The number is 210-614-8980. Amanda is on the line. Amanda, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. My question real quick, I have a daughter living in South Korea, and I'm very worried that China is not actually giving correct information with regards to how many are contaminated and how they're handling it or if they're handling it. I guess the question is, how do we verify that China is giving accurate information and that the corona is either going up or down?
Thanks for the call, Amanda. And our thoughts are with you and your daughter in South Korea. That's now also become a hotspot for the coronavirus outbreak. Dr. Jean Patterson?
Well, I don't know that I know how to determine if the Chinese are telling us the truth or not. I assume our government is working to make sure that they're being as truthful as they can be. But the important thing to know is that our government is being truthful about what the risk is to us right now. And there really is no serious risk to San Antonians, for instance, even though we do have some evacuees at Lackland. There is no real risk. It's or minimal risk in the U.S. right now. That could change. But as long as people are stay calm and everyone does what they're supposed to do, it's likely not to spread in the U.S.
We're seeing some numbers from China that one day they says it's under control and there's no more cases, and then the next day it'll be multiple thousands of individuals, and it's become and they have a history of not being as forthcoming with information as with SARS.
That's correct. With SARS, that they apparently imprisoned a doctor who was trying to report that there was an outbreak of a severe illness. So, yeah, they don't have a great history about being forthright about this. But our government does.
Can I ask you a follow-up based on the caller? If you had a child in South Korea right now, what would you tell them to do?
I'd tell them to wash their hands as often as possible. All the things we tell you to try to avoid flu. It's the only thing you can do.
What about those face masks, those gauze face masks?
The gauzy ones, apparently, CDC does not recommend that we use them. It might help you from touching your face, your nose and mouth, but you still might touch your eyes where you can infect your eyes as well. There's just not, it isn't very effective.
And people are worried about air travel. When you get on an airplane, everybody's breathing the same air. Is that a concern?
Yes. If you're coming out of China on a plane, I would be concerned. But right now, there's no flights coming out of China. I don't think we're accepting people that are coming out of China. So it's not a concern if you're flying domestically, certainly.
So this is something that we should be prepared for. And we know that new diseases, new viruses will be popping up. We have an infrastructure in place to try to identify, isolate, and start working on vaccine-type solutions?
Yeah, I mean, there's a huge emphasis right now among the scientific community for everyone to activate what they know, their specialty, what they can do. Like, my institution is very good at developing animal models, so we've stepped up and we're starting to develop animal models. People that have vaccine platforms where they know that they've made a vaccine before, they're starting to add the coronavirus to their list of problems that they're working on. There's a lot of activity, and it's generated primarily from the National Institutes of Health. And, of course, CDC is very active in the epidemiology and monitoring of where this disease is and where it seems to be going.
So if I'm a scientist, typically I imagine I get grants, and I'm supposed to work on a particular project, and I'm trying to do this type of field of research. But then when this pops up, is it expected I can put a hold to what I'm working on and be redirected to work on this all-hands-on-deck type situation?
Well, what NIH is doing, it tells people that if you have a grant, say right now I'm working on Zika, looking at Zika diagnosis, I can apply for some funding from NIH to do some corona diagnosis because I've already shown that I can get a funded grant and that I'm capable of doing this kind of thing. It's not that you stop your other work. It's just you add more.
But is that accelerated?
I mean, it's like, is it a phone call or an email? Because, I mean, things, or it's like, do I have to put in a form and I wait 6 months?
No, right now you can, we're in direct communication with HHS and CDC to talk about funding.
And Bonnie?
My question was about coronavirus, this coronavirus specifically. There's been a bit of mushiness, just a bit of mushiness around the incubation period. We know it's 2 to 14 days is what everyone says, but the mushiness makes me uncomfortable. So what can you tell me about incubation?
Well, if we'd known about this virus for years, we'd know exactly what the incubation period is. But we haven't known it that long, so we are taking an educated guess that it's between 2 and 14 days. We may find that some people may shed it longer and that 14 days isn't really appropriate, but that's stuff that we can only know after we've seen many cases and we've had many years to study it.
Do we have a pandemic right now?
Well, if you assume that a pandemic is something that's in more than two continents, yes, because we know it's in Europe, we know it's in North America, we know it's in China, we know it's in Australia, you could call this a pandemic. But it's not an epidemic in all of these areas. It's only epidemic in the areas where you're seeing a lot of cases, like China.
So, but is it going to... The next phase is that, is this going to be a virus in the wild? Is this going to be spreading as viruses do outside of containment, right?
Well, you know, it could do anything. It could disappear the way SARS disappeared.
SARS killed all of its hosts. That's why
no,
it
didn't. Not all of them.
No, it didn't.
10%, 774 people, right?
It was about 8,000 cases. Yeah. After 8,000 people were infected and 10% were fatal, it just died. And that could happen to this one. We don't know. I mean, everyone surprises us. I mean, when we look at Zika, we'd never had an arbovirus before that caused any sort of sexual transmission. And this one did. And each one of them is going to teach us something. It's going to prepare us for the next one. And we can't make any predictions about this one yet.
Here's another caller, Oscar. Oscar, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, I just had a question about if it could be transferred through food and has food been tested?
All right, Oscar, thank you for that question. And Dr. Jean Patterson?
I've not heard of any instances where people suspect food transmission. So far, we know it's like flu. It can be aerosols, and it also survives on surfaces for a long period of time if it follows the SARS model. But I've not heard anything about food.
So coughing, sneezing, you know, droplets from my air, you know, my and then it would land on a like a doorknob or something if I touched that and I touched my face.
That's exactly right.
And Bonnie?
Yeah. I don't know how much time we have to talk about this question, but this we talked about the comparison between SARS and this, and SARS had a 10% mortality, and this has about 2%. But it's so many people that have died now because so many people are getting it.
Yeah,
why is it so transmissible?
We don't know that, but it's definitely more infectious than SARS. It's 80% homology to SARS, and in that 20% difference is where we might see these differences, the infectivity rate. It's just more transmissible.
But they're transmitted the same way.
We presume they are, yes. Yeah.
So why is one harder to pick up than the other?
I wish I knew.
And then the 2% fatality rate, that seems like we should probably highlight that, because that seems, you know, it's not good. We'd like to have none, but, you know, it's not 50%.
It's not as
good. Can it mutate? I mean, anything can mutate.
Yeah, and it's an RNA virus, so it can mutate.
And this could be something that we could see season after season if it becomes endemic, right?
If it becomes endemic. Again, that's not the most likely possibility, but it's not out of the realm of possibility.
But certainly we've learned that we do need to have a robust Centers for Disease Control. We had, 20% cut to the budget recently by the Trump administration by cutting funding for research, for learning how to intercept these viruses and how to protect our population from them seems foolhardy.
Absolutely. This reduction in funding at CDC is catastrophic.
All right. I want to thank Jean Patterson, Dr. Jean Patterson with Texas Biomedical Research Institute, and Bonnie Petrie, our biomedical science reporter. When we come back from the break, we're going to be hearing the story of two incredible men who were born as slaves and became academic thought leaders and changed the nation. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay tuned.